Ladies and gentlemen, Happy New Year and welcome to the first segment of Money and Markets for 2022. John Titus, I hope you had a wonderful Christmas and holiday, and it's great to see you again.
That's good to be back. It feels remarkably like the last Money and Markets from the end of 2021, though, I must say.
Okay, so our theme is connecting the dots between Skidmore's report and cash and coin. Shall I just launch in and try and connect the dots? Or you want to say anything?
Well, you have a chance
to look at the Skidmore survey?
No. Well, we looked at it last time, but since last time, I've not seen any updates.
Okay.
No.
Okay. So for those of you who don't know, Mark Skidmore is the wonderful economist who helped survey the missing money and document the $21 trillion missing from the U.S. government. And one of the things that Dr. Skidmore has done recently is he has been doing a survey of Americans finding out what their experience with COVID-19 and the injection has been. And before he did his survey, he wanted to test polish his survey. And so what he did was a test survey using the Solari update list. So we sent it out to about 25,000 people on the email update list. I figure because of junk and filters, a lot don't get through, but figure at least half got through. Within 2.5 days, he had 1,700 responses. It was remarkable, which tells me people want to share what they're experiencing. And if you just go down and look at the section on the injection, what you realize is that almost everybody knows somebody who's been vaccine injured or killed. And one of the things Dr. Skidmore did was he said, pick out the person you know the best. Some people, you know, if you look at the percentages, say 25% knew one person who'd been seriously injured or killed, and another 25% knew two, another 25% three or more. You know, almost everybody knew somebody, but there was wide variation. One guy replied, so many, you know, I know so many, I can't even count them.
Wow.
So, but he said, take the person you know the best who was vaccine injured or killed and describe what happened. And the software aggregates the results, John, and what you see is page after page after page after page of heart attack, stroke, fast-acting cancer, neurological symptoms. It just goes on and on. And it was, you know, and when you see over 1,000 comments like this from a group of people you know are pretty conscientious and responsible as a group, you know, it was the first time I ever used the word genocide. Now, hold that thought for a second. I can't wait. Skidmore is now working through the results of his full survey, took it to a survey firm to guarantee a random sample. And I'm hoping he's going to publish it as soon as possible, because I think it can have a dramatic impact on people's understanding. But one of the things it made very clear is this entire body of 1,700 people was experiencing far more death and destruction from the injections than from whatever they considered COVID-19 to be. So it really was the difference between a bad flu and a genocide program is what it looks like. Anyway, but it affirmed the feedback I've been getting from subscribers. But until I saw that survey, I didn't know how anecdotal the feedback I was getting, and it really affirmed what I'd been hearing, that the injections are doing far more significant and widespread damage, you know, in combination with all the other harms of COVID-19 and sort of the pandemic, the economic restrictions, the masks, the, you know, whatever this bad flu is. Anyway, So we have seen unprecedented censorship happening through the online payment systems. Icon just got thrown off of PayPal. Several other allies we know just got thrown off of PayPal. We put up a notice at our store that we don't anticipate being able to take PayPal much longer. And we've been working significantly to do something called cash and coin, where subscribers come in and convert to sending us cash or sending us an ACH or a check. They can even drop cash off at the Hickory Valley grocery store if they want to drive by. So no, we made a deal with the Hickory Valley grocery store to, you know, take cash if somebody wanted to drive by and drop it off. So but what you're watching is a real effort to use the banking system and the payment system and digital financial systems to stop the true information from coming out. And it's not, you know, the control is not just stopping new media, but it's right. stopping and targeting anybody who's really trying to help you understand the truth.
Right.
So I really want to encourage everyone. We've now been told by PayPal that our online sales, they've impounded the money we made on the last day of December. They said our sales were too great. And they have limited...
On what grounds are they doing that? What too great
they
for
couldn't,
what?
They couldn't give us any grounds because...
And what gives them
all,
the right to reach in and confiscate your funds?
Hold on just a second. Robert just walked in. I figured it out. Sorry. Thank you. Anyway, so they won't give us a specific because our products and services haven't changed since 2008 when they started as our payment gateway. And they've seen every invoice since 2008. And given that the products and services haven't changed and they see an invoice. But anyway, based on suspicious activity, what they're saying is that they reserve the right to impound all of our funds above an amount which is approximately 50% of last year's January sales. So if we make 50% of last year's January sales, they reserve to impound all that money for 21 days. Now, they just changed their terms and conditions to say that they reserve the right to due diligence our content, and if they consider it inappropriate, they reserve to charge the right to charge us fees for doing the due diligence. Now, what that means is if our sales are greater than 50% of last year's, and it's approximately 50%, then they can impound all that money and then steal it.
You got to get out of PayPal now.
Of course. Well, yeah. We've been working to get a new payment gateway up for quite a while, and hopefully we'll be ready to do that. But what I'm asking is every subscriber who's listening to that, if you could figure out, particularly if you have a recurring subscription in January this month, please convert to cash and coin. Please convert. Please don't use PayPal. You know, we would prefer you, on this Thursday, we'll be set up to do ACHs with the banks. So we can set you up for ACH. We can get a check or coin in the mail. We will automate your subscription right away, even if the check doesn't come in for 2 weeks. So you don't have to wait. We'll be, if you tell us the check's in the mail, your money good. So I would just really ask that you convert to cash and coin, but also with respect to all your relationships and new media, you move away from the ISPs and the payment providers who are doing this, because this is serious censorship. And one of the things that can happen that will make a huge difference is if the market starts boycotting people and leaving people who do this.
Right.
So you're subscribing to Solari or another member of New Media to get the content you want. And yet your payment provider is getting in the middle and saying, if we give you what you've asked for, they'll shut us off and steal your money.
Yeah.
Because in one sense, it's not our money, it's your money. So I would just say what Skidmore's survey to me shows is that this is a genocide. And I think the only way they can stop people from realizing how bad it is to literally play these kinds of very invisible nuts and bolts game to control people's money. And wow. You know what I've said is we've got to stop the vaccine passports, because once they get that kind of control over your transactions, they have complete control.
They got you.
Yeah. They got you. Right. So as we discussed yesterday, Cash Friday and cash every day.
Yeah. Right.
We gotta walk back the digital systems.
Yeah.
They're not trustworthy. Right.
Right.
So I can appreciate the way somebody in France doesn't want to drive by the Hickory Valley grocery store and drop off cash. But, you know, we have many ways. So check out the cash and coin program, particularly if you're recurring in January. Worst case, if we think PayPal's going to steal your money, we're just going to de-link the system and go from there.
Yeah. Wow.
Anyway, hopefully we can bring the new gateway up in time. But just to let you know that this is happening and it's going to keep happening all year long. So you want to make sure you have ways of supporting and transacting with people which are not dependent on the highly centralized companies.
Right. Can't let the powers be jab their beak in.
Right. So anyway, but our theme then is the Skidmore survey and cash and coin. What do they have to do with each other? They have a lot to do with each other. And it's a sobering note to start the year on, but I have to tell you, I feel very, very positive about 2022.
Really?
You know, yeah, because, you know, we're starting to see who's who. You know, people are showing their face.
They really are.
It's like an infection. It's like an infection that's rising.
They're showing more than their face, Catherine.
Okay, so they're taking their pants off. But you know, for the first time in 30 years, I feel like I can now have a conversation with you know, my peers about who's who, you know, who's on first, who's on second, and what do we do?
Right.
So instead of arguing about the map, we're talking tactics. I don't think there's anybody on planet Earth, you know, who doesn't understand there's a global coup going on.
Certainly, I don't think there are very many people left who think that the civics textbook is enforced to any serious degree.
Right. So to me, this is, you know, the opportunity is, okay, you know, the bad guys have shown their face. Now can, you know, let's deal with it.
Yeah.
So, and we have to deal with it because there's no middle of the road. Everybody's been seeking the middle of the road. Middle of the road's gone. So
there's
now
no middle
pick
of the
side.
Road. Right.
Right. It's freedom or slavery.
Right.
And so, you know, which side are you on? And if you're on the freedom team, okay, let's rock and roll.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to rocking and rolling.
Yeah,
so let's dive in.
Okay. On those many notes, our first story. You ready? Here we go.
Yeah.
Countering a COVID-19 government overreach. This is from the John Birch Society. If nobody else is going to cover it, they will. Stop Federal Vaccine Database Bill, H.R. 550. Let's just get right into it. Let me zoom in here. If enacted, H.R. 550 would spend $400 million for, quote, immunization system data modernization and expansion, and to expand CDC and state and local public health department capabilities. It would require the Secretary of Health and Human Services to create national standards for vaccine database records. It authorizes the use of grants to pressure state and local officials to adopt these standards. And the best part, the bill requires that states make their databases accessible to the federal government, quote, non-governmental entities, and other persons, end quote. So that database the state is compiling on you is going to be available not just to the federal government, probably also to Pfizer and the people, the genocidal criminals.
Right, it's going to be available to all the corporate contractors and banks.
Right.
That's the way. I was a financial regulator in the government, and I've seen the security applied to federal data, and I assure you it's about as secure as, you know, leaving your wallet out on the overnight on the porch.
Right. Now that's one bill, and you know, the vast majority of bills don't ever see the light of day, but it's coming. You know?
Well, if you look at the push state by state and the federal government to get the infrastructure you need for complete control, this is part of it. And everybody's pushing, which is why I want to mention, we just asked Cori Lynn to write, and she just published, it's up at Salary.com, sort of 22 ways you can stop the vaccine passports and why you must.
Great.
So this is part of it. Yeah.
And why you must is our next story. I just cut right to it. This is 2021 epidemic of heart issues in athletes. This is kind of, speaking of genocide, this is kind of a, think of like a yearbook type format where you just have all these different players. I'm going to circle one, this guy, Danilia Moa, 36. And they just tell you what happened, type of occurrence, sudden unexpected death. And then you get into this, I don't know if you can see this gray tab over on the right.
Yeah, I can.
Yeah, but it just goes on for page after page after page. And look at some of these. These are just disgusting. I mean, 14 years old, you know?
Right.
I mean, and there's a lot of them are teenagers, kids dying. I mean, it's just page after page.
And these
page
are all people who are in remarkable health.
Top physical condition. lot of all these sports you see them in, interestingly, are like they require a lot of endurance, a lot of run. And then, of course, as soon as I say that, a baseball player shows up. But a lot of soccer players, you see that. A lot of long-distance runners, track and field. Just all with cardiac issues. You know, 17-year-old, heart attack, cardiac arrest. I mean, unbelievable number of these cases.
So there, you know, we've always had sports figures who occasionally collapse. It's not unheard of. It's the number, which is absolutely unprecedented. The last time I looked, there were over 300 athletes and sports figures, a lot of soccer, who have collapsed or dropped dead in the middle of a game.
Yeah.
And one of the things that's happening more and more, the people trying to figure out what's in these injections are collecting up and now, you know, sort of trying to keep track of every incident of this because it's so significant. And when you look at that page together, you realize there's a serious problem.
Oh, massive. You said 300. I think there's probably 300 entries in that yearbook style format.
Right.
It's six per row. And there's, you know, at least 50 rows for sure.
Right.
Yeah.
And it fits very much with the Skidmore data.
Yes.
It says, you know, the pandemic is what's happening from the injection.
Now, Skidmore, you know, you got 1,700 emails from a net that was 25,000 wide. So it's not everyone. It's people,
right.
But that's still a big number.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And remember, the descriptions of the death and destruction was simply each person picking the person they knew best.
Right.
So they weren't describing all the cases they'd experienced, just the person they knew the best.
No, that's smart because you're going to get your best information that way.
Right.
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 I mean, it's less speculative. Anyway, let's keep it going. Next story. This is from Mike Yaden. Latest evidence shows that vaccines are more dangerous than originally thought. Let me zoom in so we can read a little bit better. Let me try that again. It's not going to work. Even in people who've died post-COVID-19 vaccination and where their death was not attributed to adverse effect of vaccination, in almost all cases, they did die as a result of vaccination. What Yaden and what Sukrit Bhakti have discovered is that it's what he has a recent discovery, Bhakti, that's much worse than what they thought before. And it's the revelation that lymph node cells are also being invaded by the gene-based agents and marking them for auto-destruction. And he says, when you destroy that part of the immune system, which we loosely call immune surveillance, all manner of nasty latent infections by viruses and also bacteria explode uncontrolled. And then he gives his example, says hundreds of millions of people are going to die of unrestrained tuberculosis, Epstein-Barr virus, toxoplasmosis, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So he's just saying, you know, this is the more we learn about this, the worse it is. And then there's a video. So when you see the links, you can watch the video. I'm not going to play the video here. But that's
so we put one of Mike Yaden's videos up as the top video of the year. It's at the top videos for the annual wrap-up. And what happened was Sukrit Bhakti has been working with a German pathologist, and you had a German pathologist who did autopsies of a whole series of deaths earlier in the year in Germany. And what he discovered, none of these deaths were marked or considered to be vaccine injuries. And what he was able to document and discover, and this is described at the Gold Standard Symposium the Doctors for COVID Ethics did in December, is that essentially the immune system turned on the body's organs as a result of these injections. And it's absolutely frightening information. The Doctors for COVID Ethics has just published guidance for pathologists who want to do these kinds of analyses and autopsies. But they say that the autopsies are some of the best sources of information. And what these autopsies suggest is the problem with the injections is much, much worse than was previously thought. And what's interesting is Yaden in all of his videos is the one who most hammers, we have to stop the passports, because he understands if you get the passports, then you can mandate thousands of things, including injections and everything else under the sun.
Oh, yeah. The camel's nose is under the tent. Right. Once, well, with the passports, for sure. Right. He's right about that. But by way of that background, you know, in passports and whatnot, I want to play a clip of Bill Gates on Anderson Cooper. This is just why, you know, actually Bill Gates does not have a speaking role in this. Thank God. I hate that guy's voice, but, I watch his reaction to what Cooper is saying in this clip. This is just astonishing. Hopefully, let me know if you can't hear it. Okay. But I'm going to play this clip.
Do you think the federal government or state governments or the very least federal government should mandate if you want to get on an airplane, you have to be vaccinated. If you want to get Social Security, you need to be vaccinated. If you want to get whatever benefits they give, you need to be vaccinated for. Is that something that the U.S. can and should do?
What a creep. What a creep. What is he laughing at? What does he find so funny?
Well, because he knows that's where it's going. Yeah. You know, we're going to go through the charts on the federal budget, but he knows that part of this is to, you know, part of their game is to abrogate the retirement obligations.
Okay, so he knows, well, why is he so happy? What is giving him so much joy in that clip? He's a psychopath.
I just think he's his life experience is so divorced from the reality of people who depend on Social Security.
Yeah.
You know, so in Bill Gates's world, if you've worked your whole life to put $100,000 or more into the Social Security Trust Fund and you depend on it to come back to you, you know, then you're a patsy and you deserve what you get.
God. He's disgusting. I haven't watched TV in years, mm-hmm. and just seeing clips like that, it's just like a reminder. Oh, that's why I don't watch it, because they think that they think that Bill Gates has something worthy to offer. He doesn't.
Well, I don't think anybody in that system thinks Bill Gates has anything worthy to offer. I just think they're paid to make him look good.
Oh yeah. Yeah. But they go to him again and again and again. It's like, this guy's a high school dropout. What is your fixation on Bill Gates? This guy, he makes crappy software.
Right.
He doesn't speak well. He's not that compelling. He's not charismatic. What is your issue?
Well, but he's expendable. No, really. In other words, you need a front.
Well, that describes right? a lot of people. Yeah.
Right. So you need a front, and Tony Fauci and Bill Gates are the fronts.
Yeah, boy.
Yeah.
I don't know. There must be like a focus group somewhere where there's a certain percentage of the population that finds them just charming and endearing. I mean, they're on TV all the time.
Right, I know. Well, I know. What I don't understand is why would anybody watch that? You don't. I don't.
I can't stand it. makes my skin crawl. Anyway,
yep.
Let's keep it going. Next, we're going to go to the legal front of the pandemic, of the Farmageddon. Court allows Biden employer vaccine mandate to take effect. Governor Reynolds appeals to Supreme Court. This refers to the Federal Appeals Court, interestingly enough, this is the Sixth Circuit. Federal Appeals Court panel Friday allowed President Joe Biden's COVID-19 vaccine mandate for large private employers to move ahead. And this part I don't get. Reversing a previous decision on a requirement that could affect some 84 million workers. A 2-1 decision on a panel of the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals in Cincinnati overrules a decision by a separate court. They don't point out that separate court is the Fifth Circuit. It is a court of equal jurisdiction.
How can the Sixth Circuit overrule the Fifth Circuit?
I don't know. That's what I don't understand. It's just like, the whole thing has never made sense and it's never been explained, but that's what's going on. But in any case, that dovetails through our very next story, which is now we're going to have the U.S. Supreme Court step in and hear oral arguments on the OSHA issue on January 7th. Let me zoom in a little bit here.
Now, I have to tell you, this is unprecedented speed to get something into the Supreme Court.
Yeah, well, they can do it. I mean, they hear about 150 cases a year. But so the Supreme Court has scheduled a high-stakes expedited oral argument on January 7th in the key federal vaccine mandate cases. The cases involved the emergency temporary standard ETS issued by OSHA, which requires vaccine or test mandate for private employers with more than 100 employees. Lower courts remain split on the constitutionality, and there you can see it's the Fifth Circuit that struck it down in no uncertain terms. And so the Fifth Circuit, that decision was 3-0 against, and the Sixth Circuit decision was 1-2.
2-1, right.
So you see that you have against the mandate is 4-2, and yet somehow through this BS, the two wins. You know, so again, it gets back to there's no
right.
Rule,
but what
no
ends up is it the Fifth Circuit or the Sixth Circuit case that ends up in the Supreme Court or both?
They'll be consolidated. In other words, that's why.
So they're consolidating. Are they consolidating more than those two? Is there more?
Well, any case that falls within the ambit,
okay,
of whatever the controversy is, and this one is the OSHA mandate. So all okay. of the OSHA mandate cases will fall under the umbrella.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then how do they decide who presents the oral arguments?
They'll let any the parties do it. So in other words, it'll be the parties in the Fifth Circuit, the parties in the Sixth Circuit, and it'll be probably any number of amici.
Right.
You know, friends right. of the court okay. will come in and argue. And that's how they'll do it. But they're trying to
okay.
it'll be a pretty big circus tent on Friday.
Right.
Anyway,
meantime, the mandates are falling apart because they're cutting into companies' profits.
Yeah, they're falling right. apart. And it'll be interesting right. to see. I suspect that Supreme Court's going to do the bidding of Big Pharma. If I know my Supreme Court, having watched them do the bidding of big corporations in patent litigation for the last 15 years and destroy that profession.
So I have to disagree with you. I don't think they're doing the bidding of Big Pharma. I think they're doing the bidding of the central banks.
Okay, fair enough.
So I find the Supreme Court much more loyal yeah. to the central banks than to Big Pharma.
Yeah, well, okay, yeah. but the Supreme Court and Big Pharma being the handmaidens of the big bank, in any case, right. I think the Supreme Court's going to live up to its role as handmaiden to the big banks. So it'll be interesting because there's a lot of resistance at the ground level on the district courts to these mandates. It'll be interesting to see how the district courts handle whatever the Supreme Court does.
Well, but how does the Supreme Court have jurisdiction if a state says no? I don't think they do.
That I don't know. You have to read the decision.
Right.
We'll right. see how the Supreme Court handles that. We don't know that.
Right.
You know, anyway. Next story in Farmageddon is from United Arab Emirates. Is that how you pronounce that?
Yep.
UAE. This is incredible. They're banning unvaccinated people from leaving the country. They allowed international travel to the jabbed and boosted only. Unvaccinated UAE citizens will be banned from traveling abroad starting January 10th, according to local media, citing the country's crisis management agencies. Only the fully vaxxed and boosted will be permitted to leave. It's just astonishing to me. You think that's coming here? Or to the yep. U.S.?
Yep. I think they're going to try everything. You name it, they're going to try it.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, Kennedy always says you cannot get to freedom by complying with tyranny.
Right.
And if you look at the argument on why they want you to take an injection with secret ingredients that's killing millions of people at this point is what it looks like to me.
Right.
You know, you have to say no, and you have to say no to the passport. So, you know, the time has come when we have to be the bringers of the law, and what they're doing is criminal. So.
Oh.
Right.
It's beyond, it's genocidal, like you say.
Right. This is a crime against humanity. You know, yeah. the Skidmore survey makes it abundantly clear. This is a crime against humanity. I mean, yeah. the footballers make it clear. This is a crime against humanity. And they know exactly what these injections are doing. And we have yet to get a logical explanation of what's in them and why they want them.
Right.
So, right. Right.
And they're slow walking and now the FOIA requests.
Now they're approving it. You know, giving it to the kids.
Yeah.
So these people are Well, you know, I don't need to say it.
Yeah. Yeah, so, this is going to blow Nuremberg. Nuremberg, too, is going to just crush the original, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, you know, I said this to Reiner Fulmich, and that is, I think the injection is the story of I Am Good. You know, so I've said for many years that everybody in America wants a check in the story of why they're good. Oh, we're going to Afghanistan and Iraq to help women's rights and bring democracy, right? That's the story of I Am Good. And if I walk you into a gas chamber, I know I'm committing genocide. If I give you an injection and I can pretend I'm helping you, it's the story of I Am Good.
Yeah, right.
Right. And so how fast can we delete the story of I Am Good from everybody's lexicon? That's what we have to do.
Yeah. Like you said at the front, there's no middle ground anymore.
Right.
You know, are you for the genocide or not?
No. Right.
Yeah. Okay. Switching gears to FedWatch. Let's go to the story. This is about global debt. Global debt is fast approaching record $300 trillion. Let's just get into it here. Global debt rose to a new record high of nearly $300 trillion in the second quarter, but the debt to GDP ratio declined for the first time since the start of the pandemic as economic growth rebounded, the Institute of International Finance said on Tuesday. Total debt levels, okay, this is kind of what I wanted to emphasize here. Total debt levels include government, household, corporate, and bank debt, and they rose $4.8 trillion, but nearly $300 trillion. And when I saw that, Catherine, I will tell you, I went and checked the Federal Reserve. You know, the Fed publishes a similar report. It's actually the most recent one. This isn't from the second quarter. The Fed's most recent is from the third quarter. It's called the Z1 report of financial flows and levels. And if you look at the levels, they divide it into household on the one hand, and basically not bank and non-bank is kind of what it shakes out to. And those debt levels come out to together the liability levels to about $200 trillion in the U.S. So what I'm saying is I think that $300 trillion figure might be a little low.
Right. Well, you're talking about, you know, it's balance sheet versus off-balance sheet. And the off-balance sheet is now far more significant than the balance sheet.
Yeah, I'm not sure how. I think they add up to everybody's. Anyway.
Well, but if you look, for example, the healthcare liabilities, the future expected cost of Medicare, that's right. Not on the balance sheet. The Treasury, right. The reported Treasury debt is on the balance sheet. I suspect there's a lot of Treasury debt that is not on the balance sheet. So
yes.
So you have an on-balance sheet, off-balance sheet problem. And one of the reasons I wanted to cover this story today, John, is if you look at the extent to which the central bankers are able to get control of the Treasury and engineer their will onto the legislatures, part of the reason is because the sovereign governments are in a debt trap. So the more the debt goes up, the worse the debt trap squeeze gets.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. Right. Of course, because, you know, among other things, the interest rate, the interest payment gets bigger.
Right.
And the interest payment becomes a bigger portion of your overall debt.
Right. That's why if interest rates start sneaking up, you'll proceed to see enormous tension globally.
That's why I don't think you're going to see interest rates sneak up.
Right.
I think the Fed's aware of that.
Right.
They're going to not let that happen.
Right. But the central bankers control that spigot. And if you don't behave, they can turn it on. Right.
That's very true. But the $200 trillion figure in the U.S., think about that figure. I mean, that's approaching, you know, $1 million a person.
Right.
Right. Those are some big numbers.
Yep.
You know, just astonishing. Anyway, the Fed won't do anything about it, you know? Anyway, this next story, you know,
Say COVID-19 is what they're doing about it.
Well, we shall see about that. There's a lot, you know, but keep in mind, we're going to take a look at the story in a little bit from the Indiana insurance people. Right. Who said, you know, deaths up across the board, and they're up in lower number demographics. In other words, it would your theory. I thought that too, that you know you just kill off old people, and that'll reduce a lot of your medical debt, your Medicare Medicaid debt, right?
Right.
But the deaths are up across the board.
Correct. Right.
Yeah. Anyway, right. This next story is a transhumanism story. This is something else. If you thought that two-way computer brain communication is sci-fi stuff, now you won't. And then the author of this article, who is Andreas Euler, goes through about 10 papers that are written. And I'm going to focus in on one of them just to talk about it briefly. Neural nanorobotics, okay? So this is the paper here. Neural nanorobotics, what they do is traverse the blood-brain barrier and wirelessly transmit up to 6 × 1,000 bit per second of synaptically processed and encoded human brain electrical information. So in other words, these signals, your brain will not be able to tell the difference between what's coming from the neural nanorobotics and your own brain. Isn't that nice? And then so this author goes through all these papers and says, and the winner is, he picks the winner of those, that was the one I actually chose myself. Injectable nanoparticles that traverse blood-brain barrier already can be and are being used, phase two at least, for mind monitoring and control. This brings me back to my article about the graphene quantum dots, GQDs, in the Pfizer mRNA vaccine. And then he cites Microsoft patent, such and such, cryptocurrency system using body data activity. And the author concludes here, it seems like the total vaccination campaign may be pursuing simultaneously more than one goal. In other words, three goals: population reduction, doing away with bodily autonomy. In other words, you got humans treated like cattle. And three, preparing grounds for the injectables that will monitor and control the injectee's thoughts and movements.
Right.
That's absolutely horrifying. But that's a...
So I believe this is clearly what they want to accomplish. That doesn't mean they have what it takes to accomplish them in this round of injections. But let me back up. We saw recently, and I think we're going to mention it today, Charles Lieber, who was working in Wuhan.
Right.
Leading professor from Harvard University, one of the top experts in the world on brain-machine interface. Okay. As soon as, right before the pandemic starts, the Department of Justice throws him into an indictment and keeps him basically muzzled for the last 2 years. Now he's indicted. Now he's really muzzled. Okay. At which point, Trump then creates Operation Warp Speed and puts in charge of it the former head of research from GlaxoSmithKline, whose claim to fame is, are you ready, brain-machine interface.
Wow. Right.
And now we have secret ingredients, nanoparticles that go into the body, and we believe they aggregate after they're in the body, and no one can tell us what they're doing there, what they're there for, how they impact, you know, how they connect to cellular technology and all these other technologies. And you know, what we know is we know what DARPA and Battelle and the other sort of deep state players have been up to in terms of patents and research. And I, for one, think, you know, I've spent a lot of time trying to study the history of mind control. And if these guys think that they can significantly improve mind control by injecting things into your body, whether they get it in through the spray or they get it in through the food or they get it in through the injections, they're going to do it.
Yeah. Right.
So,
you know, we've been, you and I, wondering for over a year now, why the insistence on these injections? What is behind this?
Right.
And I think with stories like that, when you're starting to see the answer coming into shape, that they want stuff in your body so that they can control you like cattle, monitor your money, control everything.
Well, you know, somebody came out, and I've seen this several times, including some pretty credible people, asking the question, if an mRNA technology modifies your gene and you're a genetically modified organism, who owns you? Do you own yourself? I know that sounds ridiculous. It's just that if you look at the people who manage the financial system, I don't, you know, so for example, there's one protocol that says if you're a genetically modified organism, you're not allowed to cross borders without certain protocols.
Right, because you would be, you can be enjoined for patent infringement, basically.
Right. And so, they use these neat little tricks for control purposes. Whatever this stuff relates to, I believe it relates to control, improving control.
For sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Because the debt-based monetary system used for control now is coming apart at the seams. They need to replace it pronto.
Right. They need a new control system.
Yes.
And the question is, how does all of these secret ingredients and what's going on relate to how they think they're going to get to control? Because I'll tell you who's pushing the most frantically for 100% vaccination mandate is the central bankers.
Yeah.
Why?
Because the debt-based monetary system is a system of partial control. And that's not good enough.
They want partial control.
You've got to have complete control.
Right.
Or else the system melts down on itself. Yeah.
Right.
And I think that'll start to come into focus.
Well, here's the
more during this year too.
If you don't understand that, all it takes is 56 seconds to persuade yourself of that. In October 2020, you excerpted out a 56-second clip of Carstens explaining CBDCs and how they would have complete control. And I've played that, John, again and again and again. You know, and you're sitting at a dinner party and you're talking to people and they just don't believe it's really that bad. And then you take out your phone and you show them Carstens for 56 seconds and they're like, oh, my God.
Right. The problem with the $100 bill, we don't know who has it.
Anyway,
we don't know what they're spending it on.
We put the Carstens video, if you come into Soleri in the Cash Friday commentary, it's at the top. But in top videos for the annual wrap-up, we put Carstens, because to me, it's still one of the top videos of the year, because it did more to teach people what this is really about.
Yeah, I think it did. And Powell's reaction to it, too. Whoa.
Well, because Carstens is sitting in Basel, you know, and he doesn't have to deal with 325 million people who have 500 million guns.
Right.
Right. Right.
Powell's a little uncomfortable. Okay. That was good. Next story. This is from Wall Street on Parade. OCC report. It's a quarterly Office of the Comptroller of the Currency report. Shows JPMorgan Chase owns 62% of all stock derivatives held at 4,914 banks. So here you got the chart here of derivatives. This is total derivatives here. And then a certain percentage of those are stock market derivatives. Okay? And then what the Martins are saying here is that if you look at the banks that own the derivatives, JP Morgan Chase has $3.3 trillion and everybody else is an also-ran, and that's where you're getting the 62%. The significance of this, though, I couldn't tell you.
So let me tell you why I wanted to cover this, because I think it's important to understand. I spent years in great debate with the group at GATA, who were insisting JP Morgan Chase was going to get in real trouble because it had such a huge part of both the precious metals, the gold swaps, as well as the interest rate swaps. And I kept saying, look, that's not a JP Morgan Chase position. They're acting as agent. You know, it's listed as their position, but they're acting as agent for the Exchange Stabilization Fund. That is a federal position. That is a government position. It's backed by a nuclear arsenal. So this went on for years. And finally, the head of the commodities trading at JP Morgan Chase came out and said all of their derivative positions were as agent, not principal. Well, if you look at who can handle that position, there's only, you know, there's federal government, the Exchange Stabilization Fund. So I concluded that I was right. And I will say it at the same here. I think, you're looking at the majority of that, if not all of that, is a federal government position, probably through the Exchange Stabilization Fund.
Right. So, and I would be inclined to agree, because there are 4,900 banks in the U.S. So the fact that one of them would have 62% of equity positions is just not credible.
Right. Exactly.
There's no business model being served by that. There's no business purpose being served.
Right. But if you look at J.P. Morgan Chase is the definitive financial utility globally in running the financial train tracks. So it makes sense. You know, I call it the financial bazooka. If you're going to run the world's reserve currency, you have to have the ability to play economic and financial warfare in the markets. And that's part of what J.P. Morgan Chase and the New York Fed member banks do. That's their job. And so, you know, of course it's going to be listed as a J.P. Morgan Chase, but it speaks to the extraordinary nature of how managed the global financial system is and how highly dependent it is on the dollar reserve currency system.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when you get into custodianship, it's even more concentrated. It's back in New York Mellon, that's it.
Right.
You know, super, super concentrated.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, the next story in FedWatch is really a pair of stories. This is kind of astonishing. Boeing and Airbus urged a delay in 5G wireless service over safety concerns. How about that? So the heads of the two largest commercial jet makers, Boeing and Airbus, are warning against the plan to deploy new 5G wireless networks starting next month, saying interference from the upgrade could pose a danger to vital aircraft systems. Boeing says the aerospace industry was focused on fully evaluating and addressing the potential for 5G interference with radio altimeters. Okay? So the two companies, you know, are saying, hey, we got to let's cool our jets here. Well, we're concerned that 5G, which operates on a frequency close to that used by such aircraft systems as altimeters, could cause interference. They've warned of possible flight delays in snowstorms and low visibility if 5G is employed. So those are real issues, right? I mean, the airlines are telling you, hey, let's slow down here. But get this. This is the very next story. AT&T Verizon reject Biden administration's request to delay 5G launch.
Right.
Due to flight and safety concerns.
They reversed that at the last minute yesterday.
Yeah.
So you could tell somebody brought some incredible pressure on them.
Oh,
but I have to say, between part of my understanding, so this is what I believe, but you know, let's all take it with a grain of salt, is that the Boeing and the other big manufacturers have set up their software so that a pilot can't take back control in an emergency. In other words, they trust the software more than the pilot.
The pilots, yeah.
But if 5G is wrecking up the communication and the software and the pilot can't take it back, how are you going to land? You want to land in those circumstances? So what we see between vaccination of pilots and now the 5G issues, as well as what's been happening in the air traffic controller system, there are serious safety problems in the airline industry, and it's not being dealt with or faced.
Yeah. And this is a case of such criminal recklessness
on
display, right in headlines.
Right.
I mean, the fact that AT&T and Verizon are coming out in the open saying, no, we don't care about airline safety. Let the chips fall where they may. A few planes crash in the Andes. That's progress. Unbelievable.
You know, we have an instruction. We ask people not to subscribe with an AT&T email because they've censored us so many times.
Really?
It's extraordinary. I have even published articles, with detailed explanation of what AT&T has done and why you can't subscribe with an AT&T email. I mean, it's just, again... If you want good intelligence, you have to get that good intelligence with ISPs and payment services that won't make a determination as to what intelligence you're allowed to have.
That's breathtaking.
My personal experience with AT&T is if you ask me who are the three most criminal corporations in the world, you know, if AT&T would be one of them, in my opinion, or would certainly be a major contender. And that's a crowded field, you know.
It is a crowded field. And my nominee, hands down, is the Department of Justice itself. Well, for sure.
You know, here's the thing. I always said that the Department of Justice's job was the control and concentration of cash flow. That's what they do. And I dealt with people from the Department of Justice who were the most corrupt and horrible people I've ever dealt with. But I also dealt with some pretty good ones. So it was a mixed, you know, it was almost like they had the white hats and the black hats. And on a bad day, you got the black hats. And on a good day, you got the white hats. And
well, the DOJ it's roughly 10,000 employees. So, yeah, there's some white hats in there, to be sure.
Or there used to be. How many are left? I don't know.
But you think about it. If you're going to pull off crime in the U.S., you have to capture the DOJ.
Right.
You can't do it without the DOJ. They have to be in on it. That's just how that works.
Right. That's why the Bushies were so great. The Bushies were great at the nuts and bolts of controlling the legal and judicial system and the enforcement.
It's the enforcement. The DOJ is the only federal agency that could put people in jail. You capture them, smooth sailing.
Right.
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 If they can't put you in jail, you can do whatever you want.
Right.
You have to capture.
Well,
the
they
DOJ.
Were. They were. They were insistent. You had to have the intelligence agencies and the DOJ together.
You don't need. Okay.
I think you.
Bank plus law enforcement. It's ball game. The intelligence agencies do whatever you want.
The surveillance is so useful, and the ability to kill with impunity.
Yeah, but they can't print money.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's why the printing money, to me, that's the one you want. If you can print money, you can buy whatever else you need.
You print money, and criminal immunity, it's over.
Right, right.
Everything else is peanuts.
Yeah. Right, right. Okay, next.
The next story is, it's humorous on one level, but another level it's not. This is Unsung Zeros, the top 10 underreported climate flops of 2021, and this guy's
fabulous. Steve Malloy.
Steve Malloy, here you go. Writes this thing at Junk Science, and he just says, "Hey, you know, here you go. Here are the 10 biggest failures of climate movement 2021. The only reason the climate movement survives past these flops is because the mainstream media keeps it afloat by failing to honestly report the news." So he lays out his top 10. I'll just go through a couple of them. Number one, European wind failure causes disastrous global energy crisis. And he says basically 2021 statistically had a decrease in wind. And what happened is you had a resulting failure of European wind turbines. And with fewer coal plants to fall back on, Europe was forced to rely on natural gas plants, causing natural gas prices to skyrocket in a global energy crisis. And of course, this helped everybody's favorite nemesis, Vladimir Putin.
Right.
You know, that just only strengthened his position.
Yeah, Putin's had a very good year.
The next one, closer to home, the U.S., the frozen Texas windmills. As bitterly cold weather approached Texas before Valentine's Day weekend, Texas regulators opted to rely on wind turbines to provide 30% of the state's electricity. But when the weather hit, the wind turbines froze. They couldn't spin. There was no electricity coming from the turbines. Isn't that terrible?
That is terrible.
Anyway, it just goes on. And, you know, there's a story after story after story of these failures. And after a while, it's like, I can't laugh at him anymore. Because it's, you know, people without powers, that's not funny.
It's not funny. It's not funny.
You know, you want to be all woke and you want to do these things. You're trying to help everybody out. And you're freezing people out.
Right.
It's not funny.
Right.
You're not cute.
It is not funny. It's not funny. Yeah. It's not woke. Right.
Yeah. It's not cute, you know? Right. So anyway.
But I think that the reason I like pieces like that is it turns around to somebody and says, okay, what you're doing is you're freezing people out. You're freezing them to death. Is really that what we want? In other words, it brings accountability.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Anyway, that's a good piece, Steve Malloy.
Yeah.
I'm glad you sent that my way. I'm going to go back and
Yeah, that was
a
subscriber used to work at the EPA, who's got great instincts. She finds great stuff. Yeah,
that's a good one. Okay. Next story is from Wall Street on Parade. I shake my head at this one the more I look. I think this story doesn't make any sense. Something's way wrong.
Right.
This takes us back to the 2019 repo crisis that really kicked off the whole pandemic. And the Martins say, this is Wall Street on Parade, there's a news blackout on the Fed's naming of the banks that got its emergency repo loans. That was back in September of 2019. Some journalists appear to be under gag orders. The Martins say 4 days ago, the Fed released the names of the banks that had received the $4.5 trillion in cumulative loans in the last quarter of 2019. And here they are, JP Morgan Chase, Goldman Sachs, and Citigroup. Remember, Goldman Sachs became a commercial bank in the 2008 crisis. Three of the Wall Street banks.
So I just want to stop and point out, those are the owners of the New York Fed.
Well, there are three of them.
Three of them,
in theory, yeah.
Right.
So, okay, so they reveal this, these names, and as of 7 a.m., the Martins say, not one major media outlet has reported the details of the Fed's big reveal. And then they go on, they said, we reached out, a lot of people to journalists saying, what's going on? Nobody's responding. And so they say, this is interesting, we emailed a number of reporters who had covered the story in 2019, but were no longer employed at a major news outlet. We asked their opinion on what could explain a bizarre blackout. We received emails praising our reporting, but advising that they can't comment. Not that they won't comment, that they can't comment. And they asked, the Martins ask, are the newsrooms covering Wall Street megabanks now demanding similar gag orders from journalists? If they are, we're looking at a form of corporate tyranny previously unseen in America. And that's really that story. But one of the reasons I find that story so perplexing is in the repo market. Their banks aren't supposed to be borrowing in the repo market. The repo market is for the shadow banks, right?
But
the hedge funds
and
the insurance companies.
If they are borrowing in the repo market, it shows you how extraordinarily centralized and fragile the whole system is. I mean, if you're financing your operations with overnight money.
They're not. That's the thing. They're banks. Banks don't use money. They don't use bank money. They use reserves.
But those are trading operations.
That's true. They could be using it's trading.
I'm sure they're using them for trading.
Yeah.
I'm sure they're using them for trading.
That's what it has to be. Right. That's what it has to be. But in other words, a bank... So subscribers know, a bank, if it wants to take its own position, doesn't use reserves to do that because nobody transacts in reserves, okay?
Right.
They have to transact in their own bank money. Typically, though, they hold an account. So if Citigroup wanted to trade, it uses an account it holds at another bank.
Right.
And that appears to be what's going on. Because if a bank is just in trouble, okay, garden variety trouble, what does it do? It goes to the discount window, right?
Right.
Borrows reserves from the Fed. This is something else. There's another problem there. And I think you've identified
it. Well, not necessarily another problem. It's another...
It's not a solvency problem. It's a liquidity problem.
No, it's... it could be a liquidity problem, but I don't think it is a liquidity problem. I think it is part of a global coup. And you are trying to steer money into certain places to implement that. You're implementing the going direct reset. And you are steering money, and a lot of it is being done through the trading operations.
I don't know. Catherine, I mean, I only really started to delve in this story early this morning. And I quickly realized that I think the Martins are onto the tip of an iceberg there.
Yes. So the Martins are on to a tip of the iceberg. And the irritating thing is we are watching an extraordinary amount of money. So, twice the size of the annual federal budget plus that is going out to essentially the guys who own and control the New York Fed in a way that's totally blank and without any clarity about where the money's going and what the money's doing.
Right.
And the arrogance and the hubris of it is so astonishing, you don't even know what to say.
Yeah.
And the fact that not Bloomberg or the Wall Street Journal won't even bring this up.
And reporters who have been fired.
Right.
Since 2 years ago, right? Since the repo crisis happened in 2019, reporters won't talk about it.
Well, but this is, to me, this is part of FASB 56, which is we have taken a series of steps to ensure that the federal budget, the finances of all the big banks and contractors who do the operations for the federal budget, and the central bank, all of their operations and all of their money is secret, which means essentially the entire U.S. securities market is secret.
Yeah, that's basically what that means, which we got a hint of in the other Martin story about J.P. Morgan holding 62% of bank derivative positions in equities.
Right.
It is secret.
Right.
Anyway, let's keep it going with the next story. This is another interesting story. Trump appointed McWilliams resigns as U.S. FDIC chair after power struggle. This is from Reuters. Let me zoom in. Republican chair of U.S. FDIC said on Friday she will step down from her role effective February 4th, removing a key remaining obstacle to President Joe Biden's ambitious banking reform agenda. Helena McWilliams, I guess that's how you pronounce that, a holdover from the Trump administration who was appointed to the role in 2018, had previously said she intended to serve out her full term, which was set to expire in mid-2023, but she's leaving, and she did not say why she was resigning and could not immediately be reached for comment on the public holiday, meaning Christmas holidays.
So my interpretation is the Biden administration is trying to do things like insisting banks have to give the IRS all the data. And, you know, we've had this big squabble in Nebraska balked and is saying, no, you can't do it in Nebraska. But if you look at what tyranny's trying to do, they're trying to exercise control of the financial and payment systems. And I think the problem is not Democrats moving. And I think it's people who want complete central control of all the financial transactions moving in on the banks. And if you're the head of the FDIC, thank God, and thank you, John Titus, you know, Sticky Fingers didn't become the OCC regulator.
Oh,
but if you're the head of the FDIC and you see someone like Omarova seriously considered by the Biden administration and nominated to run the banks and propose that the banks be destroyed, I mean, remember, the FDIC insures 100% of the deposits. If you announce that you're going to destroy the entire banking system and all the banks, do you know what's going to happen to the FDIC?
Right.
Right. You're going to have bank runs. Well, it's not just that you're going away, but you're going to now be liable for trillions of dollars of bank deposits, you know, where you're going to have bank runs, you're going to have all sorts of instability. It could be a real financial problem for the FDIC.
It's not going to be a good time for you.
Right. So, you're not going to be, you don't want to be running the FDIC if Yahoos are in charge. I mean, I worked as a financial regulator dealing with a bunch of neocon nuts, you know, and it's frightening. So let me just tell you a story. I get called into Trump's office. We had a portfolio of subsidized housing where the subsidy contracts were maturing. And if we didn't renew
Trump's office?
I'm sorry, Kemp. No, Kemp. This is Kemp. Kemp and Trump were remarkably similar in a lot of ways. Anyway, so I get called into Kemp's office and the question is, how can we roll over and keep these apartments for low-income people without bursting the, you know, breaking the budget? Because when a 20-year contract comes due, the market rent is now much, much higher. And so the budget cost of renewing all these contracts was incredible. So I get a call from Kemp and he says, get down to my office. We found a solution. It's called preservation. So I go down to his office and he has these two little assistants from Heritage Foundation, one on either side of him. And he says, we've solved the problem. He said, the guys who own these buildings are sewer rats. They've made enough money. We're just going to expropriate and take the buildings. And we'll keep them low income, and that'll solve our budget problem. He said, what do you think? And I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, I can't believe it. I'm talking to a cabinet secretary. And I said, well, Mr. Secretary, my understanding is you have ambition for higher office. And where I'm a Republican because I believe in property rights. Now, in the political, you know, sphere in which you're going to run for office, we have a word for what you just proposed. We call it communism. And I would think that proposing communist, you know, abrogation of property rights would give you a political problem down the road. And he looked, he shook his head and he said, you know, you're right. You know, forget it. We won't do it. At which point, one of the little Heritage people turned around and said, I told you not to call her. Whenever you call her, she ruins our best ideas. So, I mean, but all I can tell you is when the Yahoos get in Washington, when the Yahoos, if you run the FDIC and the Yahoos come in with their little assistance from the crazy foundations, you know, it's scary because these people can create a lot of havoc.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that. All right. But by the way, the FDIC doesn't insure all deposits. About half.
Right. That's true. That's true.
You know.
But half is a lot. That's what, that's
it's
9 trillion?
Yeah, ballpark.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a lot. Anyway.
Do you want to be responsible for 9 trillion with Biden and Kamala Harris running the financial system?
It's not just that. It may be half the deposits, but it's like, you know, 99% of people.
Right. Right.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Next story. This is as we move into CBDC crypto. Surprise, surprise. U.S. government has a huge secret crypto stockpile. How about that? this from RT. I love these numbers. I'm going to run through these. In the fiscal year 2019, we had about $700,000 worth of crypto seizures. Next year, it was up to $137 million. Now, it's $1.2 billion. Wow, that's a nice trend line there from $700
million. Right, and $1.2 billion is not a lot in a market that's now up to about $3 trillion. But if you look at what the regulators, you know, just we talked about the Australian regulators and what they proposed. And it's probably fairly representative of what we'll see roll out through the G20. You know, when that time comes, the danger of significant seizures is very, very real. And, you know, what I find in the enforcement guys are always looking to fill up the bucket. So, yeah, seizures are coming. The growth of seizures are upon us in the crypto market.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt. So they said, you know, they've seized 185,000 Bitcoin. It's $8.6 billion. That's about $45,000 a throw. And now the other thing in the story, I mean, cut back to it real quick. According to the Treasury Fortune guy, the crypto traced and seized by his team accounts for roughly 60 to 70% of the Treasury forfeiture fund.
Really?
So, yeah, that's about that.
Wait, that's impossible. I mean, if you're talking about the asset forfeiture fund, well,
they said they already got $8.6 billion, right?
Right.
And we're at $1.2 billion now. So is it really that much of a stretch to say that it's now going to be at 60 to 70%?
I don't think that's very possible.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, that's possible. That's possible.
But that tells you where their efforts are gonna go.
So it may be that they see crypto as a much easier way to replenish. They're always looking for the history of America, particularly covert operations, is a history of replenishing the slush funds that are generated from asset forfeitures. It's incredible what a big driver is. And there's no doubt about it that crypto is a big, easy sitting duck,
yeah,
for these guys.
Right. Right. Looks that way. Right. And they're jumping on it. You saw that from those figures from 2019.
It's much harder to make that kind of money with speedboats and houses.
Right.
Right.
Right. Just a few clicks, you got $8.6 billion.
Right.
Nice.
Right.
Okay. Keep it going. Bank of Jamaica completes first CBDC pilot. This is interesting. The Bank of Jamaica minted $230 million. About $1.5 million worth of CBDC for issuance to deposit-taking institutions and authorized payment service providers, PSPs, on August 9th, 2021. It also issued $5 million Jamaican dollars, $32,000 worth of CBDC to National Commercial Bank. Okay, NCB was the first wallet provider in Jamaica's CBDC pilot, onboarding a grand total of 57 customers, including 4 small merchants and 53 consumers. Customers were able to conduct person-to-person cash-in and cash-out transactions at an NCB-sponsored event in 2021. And now, BOJ, Bank of Jamaica, plans to proceed with a nationwide rollout in the first quarter. So it's here. We're in the first quarter.
Right.
So we are here with our neighbor to the south.
Right. And it's very, if you look at the smaller countries, so Jamaica's a perfect example, this is a perfect place to try things and calibrate the system. So it's worth watching what they do and how it works.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. All right. To move to global turf wars now, the Kremlin reveals new independent Russia-Chinese financial systems. They're getting away from SWIFT. SWIFT underpins the vast majority of international transactions. Currently, during talks on Wednesday, Vladimir Putin and his Chinese counterpart, Xi Jinping, call for increasing the shares of national currencies and mutual settlements and expanding cooperation. So that's just, I mean, we're just driving
right,
Russia
so it's
and
the
China.
Same, you know, it's Putin's equivalent of cash and coin. He doesn't want to get squeezed by the payment gateways either.
You got it. You got it.
Right.
You know, and I love this. I want to go back to the story. This picture they've got here of these guys talking. You know, they look all friendly. Like they got their computers up. They're uh-huh. Zooming. Hey, you know, hey, guy. You know, anyway, they're happy because they're moving away from the SWIFT dollar system. You know.
Oh, no. Putin's happy because his oil revenues are, I'm sure, up at least 60%.
Yeah. Boy, you got that right. Okay, so let's shift gears to pushback.
Okay.
We got some good pushback this week.
We do.
The first is from the, I guess, the British Medical Journal, BMJ.
Yeah.
It's prestigious. This is an open letter from the BMJ to Mark Zuckerberg. Dear Mr. Zuckerberg, we are Fiona and Cameron of the BMJ, one of the world's oldest and most influential general medical journals. We are writing to raise serious concerns about the fact-checking being undertaken by third-party providers on behalf of your company. Facebook, a former employee of Ventavia, a contract research company, gave us a bunch of materials revealing a host of poor clinical trial practices at Ventavia that could impact data integrity. We commissioned an investigative reporter to chronicle the story. The article was published in November following a legal review, following external peer review, and subject to our journal's usually high level of editorial oversight. But from November 10, readers began to tell us about a variety of problems in trying to share our article. Some reported being unable to share it. Many others reported having their post flagged with a warning about missing context. Independent fact checkers say this information could mislead people. And then the BMJ says to Zuckerberg, we find the fact check performed by Lead Stories, your company, to be inaccurate, incompetent, and irresponsible. Wow.
Right.
They're letting Zuckerberg have it.
Well, I would call it criminal because there was one person who was harmed in, I don't know if it was that Pfizer trial, but it's a story that Kennedy talks about a teenage girl who now has to eat through a feeding tube in her stomach. And Pfizer said she had a stomach ache and threw it out.
Wow. Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, the criminality, I don't need to tell you about Pfizer's criminality, but the criminality is just unbelievable. And that's, you know, I'm about to record interview Kennedy on his book, The Real Anthony Fauci. I said this the last time, John. When I started to read that book, I said to myself, you know, I know chapter and verse on the corruption of this machinery. You know, I can't believe there's going to be that much in this book that's new to me. I was blown away. There was so much that was new to me.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, you're talking about a genocide machine.
Yeah.
American, the American children have experienced as of, I think, 2019 or 2020, so before the real pandemic hit, a drop since 2000 of 7 IQ points.
Wow.
How's that for public health?
That's terrible. You know, the fact, though, you know, you say genocide and people might shirk from that term because it's so strong. But then you see these crimes on the side that are being committed as if they're nothing. You know, why are they committing crime? Why are they so willing to spike news stories and interfere with people's, you know, private transactions?
Right.
Because it is a genocide. There is a serious underlying crime.
Right.
All these collateral crimes are speaking to the underlying monster.
Right. Well, you know, it's been amazing to me. I saw this with people who've read the Skidmore survey, or I've seen this with people who've read Kennedy's book on Fauci. They say, how could it be this bad and me not know? And that's because, you know, one of the reasons is the effort to control and stop the information from spreading is very, very significant. So there is absolutely a connection between the payment and financial control and the real information. And that's why whatever you need to do to get real good intelligence, that's what you have to do.
Yeah. I tell you, though, you know, over the holiday break, I had some dinner with people. I mean, they were astonished when they asked me point blank, are you vaccinated? I said, no. And they were in disbelief. And they said, why not? And I said, well, I think that these organizations like Pfizer, they're obviously criminal organizations. And they're like, what are you talking about? I said, well, you know, Pfizer's paid the biggest fine ever for corporate criminality, for fraud, for lying to the public about its medications. You know that, right? And there's this look, like they're looking at each other. I said, oh, that's news to you, huh? Biggest corporate criminal fraud ever. Pfizer. Look it up.
Right,
This conversation's over. You know, go educate yourselves.
It's funny because I told you when I read the book on the Sacklers, Empire of Pain, you know, they're being prosecuted for fraudulent marketing is an old, you know, they've been doing this for.
Yeah.
I don't know. So
this
that
is
goes
news
back
to you?
Right.
Right. This is their business model.
It's their That's what you were able to explain last year so well. This is their fraudulent marketing is their business
model.
This is
what they do.
Right.
Right. That's what they do.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. And the FDA just approved their shots for, what is it,
again,
5 to 11?
Yeah. Right. More, you know, youth genocide.
Right.
Unbelievable. Anyway, but it's not unbelievable because it is a genocide.
Right.
Once you understand that, everything falls into place. It's like, oh,
right.
I see. Makes sense.
Makes sense.
Okay. Yep. All right. Next story and pushback from Breitbart. This is from Austria. Protesters party in central Vienna in defiance of New Year's Eve lockdown. Zoom in. Thousands of protesters and others partied in central Vienna on Friday evening. You see that picture. There's a lot of people out there partying.
Yeah.
In clear defiance of Austria's various lockdown restrictions, crowds gathered in central Vienna on Friday to ring in the new year, partying the night away despite lockdown restrictions in place in Austria. But then you go down later in the story. It's like, while the evening's festivities marked a temporary reprieve for unvaccinated individuals in Austria, the nation's corona apartheid system is to remain in place for the foreseeable future. The Austrian government has again extended its lockdown of unvaccinated people for another 10 days, having promised that such a measure will continue indefinitely, despite needing constant renewal due to Austrian law. So they're serious in Austria about vaccines, you know?
Right. Well, this is one of the biggest fights right now in Europe is in Austria. And we have a huge passport fight in Austria and a huge one in France. I don't know if you saw it. You know, Macron declared the unvaccinated were no longer citizens and said a whole lot of things to, you know, basically attack the unvaccinated on the assumption that the French Assembly was going to pass the passports, and then they didn't. So it shows you, I go back, take a look at Corey Lynn's new piece. You'll find it on the homepage, the, you know, 22 ways to stop the vaccine passports. We have to stop them. We have to stop them. And the thing to understand, a lot of people think, oh, well, it's okay, I'm vaccinated, so I don't care. You do care, because once they lock those in, they can take away all your assets. You know, they can mandate anything. They can mandate thousands of things. It's the vaccine passport is the meta mandate. And they're going to come for your kids. They're going to come from your assets. They're going to tell you where you can travel. They're going to tell you what you can eat.
Right.
You know, they're going to tell you, okay, no more real food. You have to eat Bill Gates' synthetic meat.
Yeah, you have to eat worms. And you've got to get injected every once an hour.
Right.
So don't think you're off the hook.
Right.
The camel's nose is under the tent. We're going to abuse the shit out of you.
Right.
We own you, slave.
Right.
Slave.
Exactly.
Wake up, child.
Right.
Yep.
So I don't care what you think. You can't. Do not comply with the vaccine passports. Where they're breaking down is where people refuse to comply. Romania, you just had so many people who refused to comply, they gave up.
Yeah.
So refuse to comply. It's the only way.
Exactly. Anyway. Just refuse. Right. Yeah. Okay. Next story. This is pushback too. This is an interesting one. I consider a kind of a watershed event domestically. Donald Trump gets booed by some of his fans after he's saving... After saying he got a COVID booster, he's on tour. More than a few boos greeted Trump after he confirmed his booster shot during a Sunday Q&A session in Dallas with former Fox News host Bill O'Reilly. So in other words, the cult of Trump has its limits.
Trump's dead. Operation Warp Speed is the end of Trump. Trump's dead.
Yep. And he tried to, back to the story, he tried to say he's... He tried to spin it as positive. Don't boo. He says, take credit because we saved tens of millions of lives. Take credit, he's telling his fans, because we developed the vaccines. The vaccines were developed during my administration. Take credit because we saved tens of millions of lives. Take credit. Don't let them take that away from you. So he's trying desperately to spin it, you know, like, oh, no, the vaccines is a good thing.
All he's doing is he's taking full responsibility for the genocide.
Right.
Right.
Right. He's got his finger up, but he's not getting the wind.
Trump's dead. That's
You're on
it.
The wrong side, guy.
Trump's dead.
The cult of Trump has met its limit.
Right.
You found it and you've crossed it.
Right.
To your
so
peril.
It's now this is going to be a slow, I don't know, it could go fast, but Trump's dead.
Yeah, that's big trouble for Donald Trump. Anyway, next story. This is a sort of Italian equivalent of Austria. Must see Italians light up the sky with
this epic is my favorite. This
storm
is the best.
Fireworks. And I don't have the video, but these, you know, fed up residents in Naples, Italy joined together to form an epic display of civil disobedience to celebrate the turning of the new year when they simultaneously began firing off what looked like thousands of fireworks in direct defiance of the mayor's ban on a New Year's Eve staple. So the mayor.
This
of
is a great
Naples.
Video worth watching.
Yeah, but I don't think I could. I could try to play it, but it wouldn't. It's not.
No, but everybody can get it on a search. So so go take a look. And the reason, one of the reasons I picked it out, John, was I was up in the Jungfrau on New Year's Eve, and we had a wonderful time. And Thomas Meyer read this beautiful passage of a woman who was close to Steiner who said, you know, New Year's Eve is the seed for your intention for the year. And then the first 12 days are you set the intention for the 12 months of the year. And anyway, it was all very poetic. And then the next thing that happened is a neighbor who we've never met, or they have never met, set off 10 minutes of the most huge, spectacular fireworks. It was, I mean, fireworks are going on all over the lake and all across Interlaken and the whole area. But when you saw these ones literally right next door, I said, you know, my intention for the year is that the neighbors who've remained silent all this way and you never noticed are suddenly coming up and pushing back and blowing up the world. Because, you know, and we're seeing that in the Soleri network. I had one guy post something at subscriber input. He said, you know, I'm a retired international banker. And I, you know something? I've decided I'm going to war. So he started to talk about all the different people he was going to visit. And he, you know, I said, it's fine to print out our materials and lobby, but he was going to go see the sheriff. He was going to talk to the bankers. He was going to, you know, he was going to go hit all the points around him and to try and educate and do something about what was going on locally. So
I wonder what was his break point.
I think the break point when you realize this is a global coup and they're going to take away everything.
Yeah.
If you understand this is a coup and they're going to take away everything. And the to me, what was a really important moment was when I said, you know, we need to return the law. I'm the bringer of the law. Because most of the people who can really turn this around, they don't want to start a violent revolution. What they want is they want the rule of law. And when you finally realize I have to bring the rule of law and I can bring the rule of law and I'm going to bring the rule of law and it's that bad, then they say, okay.
Yeah. Once you accept it, it's kind of easy. Like, okay, we're back to 1775.
Right. There you go.
We're up against King George III again.
Right. Exactly.
It's been done before.
We've been to this movie before. It was funny. One of my favorite quotes is one that says, you know, we have not traveled through the centuries across the prairies, across the plains, because we're made of sugar candy.
Right.
You know, and Wim Hof says, you're stronger than you are. We can do this.
Yeah.
We can do this. Yeah. Right.
Your alternative, so what? If you lose everything. You're going to lose everything anyway.
Right.
If you don't do
anything. If you comply, you're going to lose 100%.
Right. You might as well go down swinging.
There you go. Okay, well, 2022 is the year we're going to start swinging.
Yeah.
So if you haven't started swinging, you're going to be swinging in 2022.
Yeah. Okay, into charts. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay, let's hit it. Asset classes, 2021 performance, right, so top performer.
I just
Bitcoin.
Wanted to, yeah, the top performer, Bitcoin, although it swung around quite a lot. So, you know. You could buy high and look at it low and you could have gotten a very negative thing. But obviously, S&P is still strong. And gold and silver in the doghouse.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
And of course, Treasury's not doing so well. The long-term bull market in bonds is over, but precious metals did not have a good year. You know, and I look at that chart and what I say is, wow, silver's a great opportunity.
Yeah, I'm anyway, a fan.
Yeah, I'm a fan. And clearly, the strongest area in the S&P was energy, of course, because energy prices were flying. But second strongest area was real estate, because everybody's, of course, trying to scarf up the land. So let's just jump to the next one.
Yeah, okay. Let me hit this. Here we go.
Okay. You know, the Fed printing money and that money helping to drive up asset values in the stock market was part of the rich getting richer. We have 500 new billionaires globally, and the top 1% is just gaining a bigger and bigger share of total wealth. It's quite extraordinary. And it's very much engineered by the federal credit and the central banking policies. I mean, this is not the rich being productive. This is the rich being great at rigging things, unfortunately.
Right. That's exactly what it is.
So the pandemic contributed mightily to more centralization of the economy and wealth.
Yeah.
Okay. Keep going.
All right, here we go.
Right. So this is a chart from the P. Peterson Foundation, whose framework for the world is very different than mine. So I don't always agree with their numbers, but they do a fairly good job of putting together charts. And this is a list of all the different forms of subsidy that occurred on the pandemic. And you have this gush of federal spigot. And, whenever you get this gush of federal spigot, you have inequality going up, even though... you had a lot of small businesses that were paid basically payroll protection. But when you shut down a business or hiccup a business that way, you're basically paying it to die, whether it's a fast death or a slow death. So I don't put much comfort.
I noticed that the financiers didn't benefit from the pandemic at all. It's quite curious, Mr. Peterson.
Oh, because all that's off... it's off the overt budget. It's done by more invisible means. Okay, Next slide. Okay, so it's very important to understand, is this coming through backwards on my teleprompter?
I forgot about the backward teleprompter. Income security spending is up 31%. Okay. Social Security up only 4%. Health 6%. Federal spending by function. It's not up. Sorry. It's a percentage of the pie. So right. The red is fiscal year 2021. So federal spending by function. So income security is 31%. Education is 25%. You know, some of these numbers I don't trust because they're negative.
I don't trust the numbers, but basically what this chart says is you have an enormous part of the population dependent on federal checks. It's extraordinary, and it gets worse every year. And one of the reasons I believe for the genocide is one way to solve this liability is to just lower the size of the population getting checks. You know, I hate to say it. So, and go to the next slide, because the big problem is on healthcare. If you look, John, now this is federal healthcare, and this gets back to your trillions, hundreds of trillions of dollars of liabilities that are not on the balance sheet. Uh-huh. But if you look at both the Medicare and Medicaid system, what it's anticipated to cost over the next 10 to 20 years, and then you look at the state pension funds and the corporate pension funds, the mm-hmm. state pension funds have not accrued savings to pay for their healthcare benefits. And the corporations, if you look at what's coming out of their budgets to pay for healthcare, you know, they can't afford to keep carrying those raises. So whether it's the state pension fund system, the corporate employer systems, or the Medicare, Medicaid, you have an out of control, expensive healthcare system. And if you look at what's been happening during the pandemic, it's a very ugly way to re-engineer your liabilities down.
Yeah.
How many people do you know who say, you know, I'm not going to a hospital ever again, or I'm not going to the doctor? You know, all this since March 2020, everybody's been paying their premiums. Raise your hand. Everybody's been paying their premiums, but they haven't been going to the hospital or doctors and staying away, right? So, right. So the economics if the healthcare system just stayed on remote control, it would blow up. And so part of the pressures we're seeing is how do you serve all the different corporate constituencies and not have it blow up? One way is to use all the money to subsidize the corporate interests and make sure the patients don't, you know, get cut.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's an ugly picture, but it's a picture
It's not a good picture.
Right. Yeah. But it's a picture we've known is coming for a long time, and that's why, you know, we did a big effort at the end of the year to encourage people to do Wim Hof, but you have got to get radical about really taking care of your health on a proactive basis and doing it in an economic way. And the healthcare system cannot help you.
No.
Right.
No.
Right.
Okay. Next up, we have national debt will rise to a historic. Pete Peterson complained about national debt. I noticed Peterson never complains about the private Fed being able to print money as opposed to everybody else. But anyway, he's complaining about national debt.
Well, but here's what he never complains about is the fact that if you take out the $21 trillion, so that $21 trillion that disappeared was financed with $21 trillion of treasuries.
Right.
So if you take out, if you returned the $21 trillion and paid off the debt that financed it, you don't have a debt problem. But he never mentions that.
Right.
Right. But this is part of what gives the Fed and the bond market and the banks so much power is you've got the federal debt. You know, the federal government's in a debt trap.
Right.
Right. Okay. Next slide.
It is. It's in a big, it's a big time. Okay. So this is revenues from 2021 were higher than revenues previous fiscal year. Individual income taxes up 27%. Payroll taxes flat. Corporate income tax is up 76% from the previous year's customs and on down. But the big ones are individual taxes and corporate income taxes, up 27 and 76%.
Right, but here's the message here. For several decades, corporate taxes as a percentage have been going down, 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 down. The federal budget has been carried by individuals, but at the same time, if you look at who's being paid to run the operations, it's more and more big corporations. So corporations are taking out more revenues and benefits while they're contributing less and less in taxes. And this is one of the absolute drivers of inequality. And we're just about to send the taxation. So CBDCs is going to the printer next week and we'll come out and then the taxation wrap up. But when you think about taxation and the fact that we're financing a criminal government, if you look at the people who are being genocided, they're financing the government. It's not the corporations.
Right. I mean, you know, corporate taxes are up. They were a pittance before. You know?
Right.
Come on, guy. Okay. Let's see what's next on this. Here we go. This is
a chart.
Low-res.
Right. This is a chart from Deutsche Bank that shows the engineering of the payment systems. And basically, you know, in a nutshell, we are watching an effort to push to a payment system structure globally that can support the smart grid and complete control.
Yeah.
And it shows you how important the 2025 date is. And this is a critical year. One of the reasons you must push back is they're driving for total control in 2025. And so 2022, if we turn the boat, you know, it changes everything. But we cannot let this drive to total digital control continue. So
yeah.
One more, I think.
Okay. Yeah, let's see.
Our old friend. When I saw this one, this is the last year. So it's,
here you go.
You know, January 6th or January 5th, 2021 to January 5th, 2022. So it's not exactly all of 21. It's got a little bit of 22 in here. But when I took a look at the VIX, I said, the Fed put says it all. So
yeah, it does.
The rich got protected and the poor got, you know, to pay 50% more for their oats, their oatmeal and their coffee.
And you got, your oats and your coffee and your gas, the top three.
Right. So inflation is a serious problem. And we're going to hear a lot about inflation all year long. And we've talked a lot about it here, about how it's very important to constantly re-engineer your budget for serious inflation.
Yeah, so, I'm actually about to record a video about how what the Fed has done with QE is irreversible on inflation. They can't get that genie back into the bottle. It's not mechanically not possible.
So, you know, my theory is there's a hotline from the central bankers to Fauci, and Fauci's job is to create more deflation day to day to day. It's like, it's, you know, prices taking off. Okay, yeah. Tony, you know, figure out how to shut down. You know, we need two more points of inflation. Shut it down. So.
Yeah.
Yep. And it's funny.
That's
if you,
funny.
It's a friend of mine, right before the restrictions hit again in Europe, sent me an announcement that the German producer price index had gone up 18%. Two things happened in November. So the German producer price index had shot up to 18%. But then there was an announcement in the statistics that the all-death mortality in November in Germany was 24% greater than the average of that month for the last 5 years.
Wow.
And I took a look at that and I said, they're going to lock it down. And it's got nothing to do with COVID-19.
I mean,
had nothing. It had to do with, you have a combination of inflation and you need to suppress that information that's now going to spread virally about the deaths.
Yeah. Oh, that's astonishing.
Right. So just quick looking ahead, tell me what's on your mind for 2022.
But I have a New Year's resolution. Number one, I'm going to make more videos this year. I'm bound and determined. That's number one. And number two, to really sort of make videos about, you know, what's going on fundamentally. Try to really sort of walk through storytelling and really explain what's going on. And I'm going to put out the first of a series on basically the loss of the rule of law and the loss of sovereignty in the U.S. I think that's probably going to be a 5-part series. I'm almost done with part one. So 2022 is going to be a busy year for me making videos.
Right. And I should point out, you're going to, at the last week of the month, we're going to be talking about sovereignty, because you're writing the sovereignty section for the annual wrap-up. And we're looking forward to that, because you have no idea how frustrating it is when people come to me and they say, you know, where can I put my money that's safe? And I say to them, if there's no rule of law, there's no place that's safe.
What are you talking about?
Well, but I think this issue of sovereignty really needs to be communicated. And you would think that it had been, but it hasn't.
No, it's so fun. No one, people take it for granted. And until it's gone, then you're like, oh, okay, now I get it. I don't have any way to enforce my winnings.
Right.
There's nobody to stand up and collect.
Right.
They can just confiscate it all. So it's all for naught anyway.
Right.
No.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what I mean. Telling people, what are you talking about? Your winnings. Who's going to enforce your gains?
Right. So 2022 is the year to get to know your sheriff.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. You better pray you have a good one. Okay, John Titus, I look forward to talking to you next week. Thank you for joining us on the Solaria Report.
Happy New Year, Catherine. Good to see you again.
Bye.
Bye.